हरिः
The rasa dance, the word rasa is significant herein. The rasa dance is performed by Lord Krishna in the company of the cowherd damsels at Vrindavan. And the personality of Godhead, Garbhodaksha Vishnu, is also engaged in rasa enjoyment with his external potency, by which he creates, maintains, and dissolves the entire material manifestation. Indirectly, Lord Brahma offers his respectful obeisances unto Lord Sri Krishna, who is factually ever engaged in rasa enjoyment with the gopis, as confirmed in the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, in the following words: Parardhante so budyata gopa vesho me purusha purastad avir bhabhuva. The distinction between the Lord and the living entity is definitely experienced when there is sufficient intelligence to understand its internal potency, as distinguished from the external potency by which it makes possible the material manifestation. And so the external is just giving the temporary results that you see here. But the internal potency, then that actually is something that gives pleasure. Right? Yeah. So this is important to note, because we're under the impression that the external is going to give us some pleasure.
Yes.
But it's not under our control. And so us getting pleasure is only as the modes of nature allow it. Right, by our previous karma. Mm-hmm. So it's not by our desire. It's by whatever work you've done, you get the results. Right? And who sets the rules for the laws for working? That's the Lord. Right? So, but the Lord, it's by his desire that his internal potency carries that out, and he is enjoined. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference. He has the internal potency, and we don't. Though that was our idea, yes. We came here with great hopes, but we ended up with the external energy and did not get the internal potency. Yes?
Maharaj?
Yes.
It seems that there is some pleasure in when we see the external energy manifesting in such a way that corresponds with some imagined state that we think will make us happy.
Yes.
But then there is some result.
No, but that's it. But okay. Just, you know, think about it. When was the last time you had such a moment? Right? And then, what about the one before that?
I'm still working on the
first one. Okay, then let's not restrict you. Just take your whole lifetime. You know. Something here and there? Nothing?
I'm blank.
Okay, so now then you understand. So that means that happiness is defined by that situation working out exactly as you hoped it would. You know, and the closer it does, the greater you call the happiness. But that happiness is not necessarily that great, because otherwise you can't remember it. You know what I'm saying? So only if it's very exceptional you might remember. Now, let's say if we ask about, you know, a time when you were very uncomfortable,
Oh, which one?
Then you have a long list.
Yeah. So there's this faith that, okay, I can see small situations where something was corresponding, and then in the future, by my arrangement, everything will be.
Yes, that's the idea. But the point is if we're actually being scientific, it hasn't happened in the past.
No.
You know, in other words, if it was such a significant thing in the world, why isn't it recorded in history?
So we would have to.
When was, Napoleon happy? Is there a recorded moment when he discusses it? What about Caesar?
Yeah.
You know, Alexander? You know, like that. So you don't have such. Do you have some moments when saintly persons are, you know, the ecstasy of this one and the realization of that one? Those will be there. But in your people who are trying to control and enjoy the world, there is nothing in recorded history. So that means it doesn't really exist. Otherwise, people would record it. It's a big thing.
You could write a book.
Yeah. So that's the whole, it's not there. But because the soul being by nature ananda, even the littlest something will give hope.
Yes.
That's why Maya can pile on a whole, you know, mountain of problems,
yes,
and then just give you one
cherry
little
on
drop.
The top.
Yeah, and then you, yes, everything's nice. You know, so like that. It's worth it. It's worth it. Yeah.
Just keep at it.
Yes. Just. Yes.
It seems that the material conception of enjoying is very much tied in with the idea of being the controller.
Yes.
It turns out the way I want it.
Yes. Yes. Well, it works out the way we want, because it may be that the situation that comes up for you is something that someone else would want.
Yes.
But it wasn't what you wanted, and so then you're not happy. So it's not actually that there is a definable happy,
yes,
standard of happiness. It's just whatever you conceive of that will you'll be happy. That's what it is.
And it all goes back to our conception of control.
Yes. So that's why then we function within the Vedic culture, which defines what is happiness and what's not and everything like that, because that's defined based on what is happiness and spiritual. You know? So that way we get used to that. You know? But if we are obstinate taking the position that, but I'm from this background or that background, and so why should I deal with this? That's like saying, you know, I'm from the material world, and so why should I deal with the culture and values of the spiritual world, even though I am in this movement that is somehow or another, you know, defined as, you know, something about Krishna consciousness, you know, and also international, that it kind of everybody can be included, you know, like that. I mean, you do have some countries where it's the National Society for Krishna Consciousness, because the country won't allow you to say international. Yeah, you do have countries.
Wow.
I think like the National Society for Krishna. I think Kazakhstan's like that. There's a few countries that you have to say national. You can't say international.
Pranamoy.
Yeah, that's our place. Yeah. It's our country. What do you mean international? So that's the thing, is that we're not actually understanding. Due to the mode of ignorance, we're not understanding what's happening, how the modes have tricked us. Because the point is what's being given is a culture. That's why we're associating with the great personality. What they value, what inspires them, what they consider success, what they consider failure.
And they will even say that because we're a spiritual movement, we can be totally materialistic in our culture.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but how are you spiritual if you're being materialistic?
Yes.
Because that's the whole point, is we'll say you connect everything to Krishna, it becomes spiritualized.
Yes.
But the point is why are you connecting, what are you connecting to Krishna? Of course, you start from what inspires you. So we don't have a problem in somebody being from a particular, habit, that they practice that in connection with Krishna. That's the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness. So it's why the particular one that person's absorbed in. Anything like that is connected to the Lord. All right? So why that one? The opposite of what they're militating against, that also connected to the Lord, is also brings you closer to Krishna. All of them do. Right? But that's the beginning stage. Right. So the more, if it's mild, then it's karma misra bhakti. If it's heavy, then it's bhakti misra karma. So when it's professed as a philosophy, it's bhakti misra karma. So it really is not very important for Krishna consciousness. There's not much you can work with. Yeah. You know, because the point is, it's regulation. So then how do you define regulation? Mm. You know what I'm saying? At some point you have to define it.
Yeah.
You know, how do they say, you know, what is there? You know, so I'm wearing, you know, the clothes that my group, can I wear a chain?
Mm.
You know, would that be okay? Would that be not? You can say, no, that doesn't fit the definition, but as Western goes, that also is going to have rips. You know, can I wear a leather jacket? You know, like that. You know, what about, you know, piercings? You know, like that. You know, I mean, where? How do you define it? Because all that's being practiced in the West. So how do you define it? So that's the thing, is they have their thing, but they're defining it by their conditioning. It's not they came from a different conditioning, and then they came into that. They're defining my conditioning is the universal conditioning. But unfortunately, it's not. Right? And we see that when you take that quote-unquote universal conditioning, apply it to any other culture in the world, that culture anywhere else goes down, not up. You know? Like that, you know. So it's yeah. So
if we talk about happiness,
yes,
this realm is considered to be not too bad, not too good.
Yes, this is in the middle.
So it means it's not that bad.
No, it means it's not that good. You know, it depends who you ask. Like we mentioned before, is that I think it was Kavi Chandramar explaining in Japan, you don't ask how you know, like in the West, you say, oh, how are you? You know, you don't say that in Japan. It's just taboo because they're very like practical and thoughtful. So that how am I? Well, I'm living in a place where I don't like my house, I don't like my family, I don't like my neighborhood, I don't like, you know, even the city I'm in. I got to get on a train, ride 2 hours down to the thing. I hate doing that. I sit with all these weird people that I don't like. I go to work, I hate my work, I hate everybody around, I really hate my boss, I hate the pay. And then after doing that all day, I have to go back again to the situation that I really don't like, and they just have a meltdown. Like that. So you just don't ask. You talk about the weather. When you see a Japanese guy, oh, nice weather. Oh, it's raining today. Oh, yeah. Like, you just don't ask how they are. So they would look like, you know, their perspective was the glass is pretty much empty. But they have high hopes. You know, there was that story of Prabhupada went to, when they first went to Dainipan, and they like that, and then the stack of cards, and then he pulled out his card on the top, like that. So that they think if I get that, but how many CEOs are there? Yeah, so how many, you know, you take all of them, that means, you know, a few hundred thousand in Japan, so what did the rest of the millions do? They're not happy. So it depends who you ask. So, but there is hope, because the verses, I think it was in one or two chapters before this, that Maitreya was explaining that there are two kinds of people in this material world that are actually happy.
Yes.
The Paramahamsa and the fool. So you take whichever one. Both of them require work. So, just which one do you prefer? Yeah. Yeah. It, because the soul values happiness and doesn't value distress, therefore a mountain of distress is reduced and a moment of happiness is increased. Therefore we feel it's balanced. Does that make sense? So we only bring this up only because there is an alternative. If there was no alternative and this is what you got, then hey, you know, then we're okay, you know. But because the spiritual world is there and the relationship with the Lord, So everything that we're looking at is actually there. So whatever we're trying to find here is there. That's the problem, is that because we want to enjoy there separately from the Lord, we're given here. Like that. But as soon as we give that up, so being happy is not the problem. Right? It's being happy separate from the Lord, because we're not separate from the Lord. So we can't. The example Prabhupada gives is that the hand's trying to enjoy the food separately, taking the stuff and pushing it up and say, hey, I want to eat. Yeah, this is it. It's not going to happen. I guess we'd work it out with the other hand. Is that okay? Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
It seems that happiness is a state of mind.
Yes.
And some people, devotees, among devotees, doesn't really matter. But some people are happy by nature, and
yes.
Some people aren't. It doesn't,
yes.
No matter what they do.
Yes.
So in devotional service, you see just people, they're kind of okay, but not like you can't actually define them happy. Is that a...
It's whatever the condition, and you'll start there, and then as you become purified, you'll come to the neutral state. But that neutral state means it's basically lacking the distress that the material nature has to offer. It doesn't mean the situations change, they just don't bother you so much. You know, and the Krishna consciousness is pleasant, but when you come to the point of ruchi, taste, that then will become dynamic. Then it's actually, you'll see there's a taste.
Mm-hmm.
Then it takes on a whole different flavor. And so, yeah. So it works. So neutral is not bad. You know, it just means it's there. It means it may not be absorbed in the transcendental, but you're not absorbed in the material. So that's a good sign. So if you're endeavoring for the spiritual, it's just a matter of time. But one should use that as, you know, where's the ecstasy, and think it's not here, and then go back to it. Material life, because that's the reason we joined, is it didn't work. And we can say, it's no, but I can try it again. No, we'd already tried for a long time.
But then we didn't have the knowledge. Now we do have the knowledge of how to enjoy it.
But then if that's the case, then the smartest would be the happiest people on the planet. Right? And if you meet them, they're not, you wouldn't call them the ecstasy group. You know, they're not like bliss personified here. You know. Yes? No? No? You've met? Yeah.
I'm loving them.
Yes. Now he's the Krishna conscious. The Prabhupada said he's transforming hippies to happies. Yeah. Is that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing, is that even one has full knowledge, one's not happy. You know? Indra has more knowledge, the residents of Satyaloka have, but still there's something missing on the material platform. So it's only when you're connected to the Lord. You know, it's just like, let's say I take my hand, I put something nice, some nice food, and I'm smooshing it up. Now let's say, the reason I'm not enjoying is because the condition. So now I make a nice little, you know, how you say, box that has very nice environment in it, and I put my hand in there and then mush up the food. Does it get better? Yeah, so that's all. So it's when you connect to the Lord, because we are part and parcel of the Lord, so when we're connected to Him, that's when everything becomes alive. So it's like a spark. When it's in the fire, then it's fire. When it's out of the fire, then there's not much happening. It's just getting convinced of that, you know, because there's always this thought, well, if I made this adjustment, then everything would be perfect. When it doesn't really matter.
Yes.
So in Jagadish's example, the happy person is just, by his karma, he's just able to sort of smile through the suffering.
Yes. That's all. Now, that can be an advantage using it in Krishna consciousness, as long as one's endeavoring Krishna consciousness. It's not that itself will have any lasting effect, because at some point karma runs out. Right? You know, because according to tradition, then that happy person at some point ends up in a situation where he just sees things realistically and is not happy. You know, so that's always a sad moment, because there was always that hope that, well, maybe somebody get through their whole life happy. You know, so it doesn't really work. Because the material ideals, the difficulty is people don't actually know the science how to connect the ideal to the situation they're in. You know, an example being, a revolutionary or an anarchist, they're working on ideals. They always talk ideals. But the methods they use are very much unideal. Yes. You know, it's not like they're talking this nice, wonderful society, so they're using nice, wonderful methods. And one can say no, but, you know, of course, the cliche is the method, you know, the means, the end justifies the means. But the thing is what's ever happened. Now you take using, just you could say, is you can't do it by any of the means. No, you can't do it immediately by any of the means, because they're impatient. They don't have the good qualities to do it. You take someone like Gandhi, then he used good methods over an extremely long period of time with immense amount of, you know, physical and emotional and political distress. And he got seemingly the results he was looking for, though after he got them, he figured out they weren't worthwhile. And others used the same thing. I think Martin Luther King used the same technique. I'm not sure that Mandela didn't use, you know, so it seems to be, it works, and it creates very large scale using, you want something good, you use something good to get it. But the problem is that it, within the material world, even you get, it still doesn't create what you're actually looking for. So all it was is, you know, it's like, okay, now they're free from British rule, now they can be British on their own. You know, so that wasn't exactly what he expected. You know, or, okay, you're not exploited as a black man, now you're exploited as a white man. You know, like that. Or the other is that, yes, now we're all free and equal, and now the crime rate's the highest of any country in the world. So, yes, they got what they were looking for, but the results weren't exactly what they thought would turn out to be. So that's the whole point, is that you have to use proper methods. You know? So then that idealness, they don't know the science to connect it. So only when you're following the Veda, then is that plan given. That you want this particular result, then these are the activities you have to perform. Your lifestyle, your identity, how you deal, and then you can get. But then, that even though that works so perfectly, it still won't make you happy, because it doesn't address the soul, it only addresses the conditioning. Therefore, when you follow the Vedic principles in connection with Krishna consciousness, that will actually create the happiness that one's looking for.
So, someone who's able to smile through the sorrows materially, is it easier for that kind of person to understand the attitude of gratitude to Tena Kamtham to Shri Shivananda?
Yeah, could be. As long as there's some, as long as they're able to be thoughtful, because you're going to have the person who can smile through it because they're thoughtful, or a person who smiles through it because they're not thoughtful. So the problem is the not thoughtful person, at some point somebody's going to poke him enough it hurts. Because someone who's given in Niti Shastra, the wild animal cannot tolerate tame animals. Wild animals cannot tolerate tame animals. Let's say you have a group of tame elephants. They're on a caravan going through the jungle, carrying goods. If wild elephants come across them, they'll kill them, because they just—it's for them. This is not proper. You understand? So wild people, culturally wild people, can't tolerate people who behave themselves. You understand? So the problem's not because the rich people are rich and the middle intellectual class is not. Because if they became rich, they'll become just as nasty. The problem is that rich person is able to control himself in all these situations that the middle-class intelligent person absolutely can't. The middle-class graduate cannot sit through an evening fundraising dinner. They could not pay $1,000 a plate. They could not sit, even if it was $100 a plate, they could not sit there for 4 hours. Well, this one and that one, you know, clinks their glass and stands up, says things, people stand behind the podium, all these things go on, everybody's sitting in it. They could not do it. Absolutely don't have the nature. So what they're militating against is that control. They're saying that it's, oh, they're wealthy, they're going to exploit. They do exactly the same thing. All it is, they don't have the facility. So really, it's the untamed against the tame. But the point is the problem is that tame's not being used nicely. But even if it's used nicely, like Yudhishthir, still Duryodhana doesn't appreciate it. So it's not that, well, if they used it nicely, then, no, you wouldn't like it anyway. So it's just a matter of that, that's the mode of ignorance. It makes one thing look exactly the opposite. So that's the whole thing. It's whatever they, you know, the elite class is thinking everyone else is common, but what they're doing as elite is what anybody in elite position would do. So it's very common. You know, so that's the thing, is everybody's thinking that they're in a better position than they are, when it's generally the opposite of how they perceive it. So that's the point, is that unless you bring yourself in line with the Vedic principles, then nothing sustainable. You know, it's talking about sustainable living and all that. What is sustainable? You know, it's just like this. We were standing outside of what do you call those big, you know, monster like shopping supermarket? A supermarket. It's organic, right? The whole thing's organic, and it's not that it's the only one. There's three of them. Right? There's one, the high-end one, there's the medium one, and then there's the low-end one, you know, like the warehouse. And so then we're standing outside there, and then a university professor, lady, dressed in overalls and work boots, rolls up in a, you know, muscle pickup truck to pick up, you know, fertilizer and seeds and all that for her organic gardening. Did I miss out any politically correct definition here?
Probably, but
it's good, right? It's good. But the problem is she has to get that using your truck, which uses petrol, which is driving on asphalt roads. So where's the sustainability? You know what I'm saying? So they're just buzzwords that people use, you know. So the whole point is that the real sustainability is God consciousness, because that's what you can sustain. Because the material, you do the best you can at the point you are. Therefore, the only way she can get the stuff and be in her classes so she has the money to do that is to drive her truck. You know, if she got on her horse cart and all that, she'd miss her classes. You know? Like that. So that's how it has to work. So, but it still becomes a waste of time unless it's connected to the Lord. Once it's connected to the Lord, then whatever is your position of ideal situations, then they become perfect. But the problem is if we actually have faith that ideal situations have meaning without Krishna. You know, so all this political correct talking and this and that, where's the connection to Krishna? Where's the Vedic foundation? Where's the piety? So all it is just morality. And it's not even theistic morality. It's atheistic morality. And so it's not sustainable. It doesn't give the results. Otherwise, if it did... Now, let's say I had a good business plan. In 20 years, would I not be able to see some results? Yeah, I mean, I'd see way before that, but at least in 20 years. What about a good administrative plan?
Sure.
Right? You know, a good educational plan?
Yeah.
But what has political correctness produced in 20 years? Since it's become the forefront, you know.
More.
Yeah. Oh, yes, okay. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a good plan. It hasn't produced anything. Otherwise, it should have produced. Right? I mean, Duryodhana used political correctness and got himself an empire. You know, with Yudhishthira Myers out in the forest. At least he got something for it. You know, it only lasted him 14 years. You know, but at least he got something. But here is that you don't have anything, and then you know what it means.
Actually, most Westerners would take that deal.
Yeah. It's like, what's it? The example of Prabhu was saying about he was one of the god brothers, sannyasi, had fallen down. He was, I think, married some lady or something like that. And then after some time, Prabhupada saw them together. And after they left, he turned to one of the sannyasis and said, he fell down for her? Kind of like, you know.
Something ain't right.
Yeah, it's like, you know, at least you should get something. You know, it's like the Brahmin was lamenting. I lost my caste drinking water from the Muslim, but it was only half a glass. I didn't even quench my thirst. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that these modern techniques, is seemingly they give you something, but they don't really give you anything. That's the sadness. You know, people are talking about being real and this and that. Where's the reality? Reality is it works. You know.
Is that why Buddhism is so popular? Because people...
They're angry.
They're angry and they don't see anything ideal, utopian, and they just want
to... Okay. Yeah, so Buddhism is natural. Because Buddhism also gives rise to sense gratification. Because if there's nothing, then that means you can do anything. You know.
Not in real Buddhism, though.
No, but that's the philosophy gives rise to that, because it's anger after frustration, so you want something. So if there's nothing, then that technically you can do anything. Because they're quite extreme if you get into what their position. Because what you see is not real. Real Buddhism disappeared during the lifetime of Buddha. You know, he was probably the only one that practiced it. But what you see now is tantric, so it's always mixed with all this wild stuff. You know, it's just bad. So because that's the end of the line, then the natural thing is karma again. So the next thing that you'll see is when they get like this, something come around and it'll get better, and then everyone will just go back to karma. Yeah, and then from karma to jnana, and from jnana to... Yeah, so that's just the thing. So, you know, karma goes, and there's fear, and then there's avoidance. So, you know, you were the gross sense enjoyers, that didn't work, you ended up in a big war. You know, then were then fearing everything, and, you know, but somehow the whole McCarthy thing didn't work out so great. And so then you just get into there's nothing, it doesn't matter. You know, and that's not working out. So then, you know, just keep going. Okay. Let me take shelter of the lotus feet of him whose incarnations, qualities, and activities are mysterious imitations of worldly affairs. Right? Because he's acting on the human platform because it's fun. We're working on the human platform because this is what we got. One who invokes his transcendental names, even unconsciously, at the time he quits his life, is certainly washed immediately of the sins of many, many births and attains him without fail. Srila Jiva Goswami touches on verse 15 in Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 152. Even the dim reflection of devotional service destroys all sins and brings one to the abode of Lord Vishnu. The Narada Purana explains that two intoxicated drunkards, proud as cuckoos, once waved a stick tied to a rag as they danced in an old abandoned temple of the Lord. These drunkards attained the result of raising a flag in the Lord's temple, and in this way returned to the Lord's transcendental abode.
That's a good result.
Yes. Yeah, that he sees immediate. Right?
Yeah.
In the same way, a bird that had been killed by a hunter and had then taken up shelter in the mouth of a dog, when the dog ran around the temple, the bird attained the result of circumambulating the Lord's temple, and in this way it returned to the Lord's transcendental abode.
I've never seen a bird taking shelter in the mouth of a dog.
Whatever, it happened. It only has to happen once.
Yes.
You know, say once in a day of we see once in at least half a lifetime of Brahma, that's enough.
At least it's recorded, unlike yes. sure there, happiness.
There's also, I've heard in the Sri line that there's a hunter shot a bird, and it was flapping on the ground around in a circle. And after doing this circle three times, it suddenly got a body with four arms, and that went back to the, you know, spiritual world. I wonder what was this, you know? And then the devotees saw this and that, and they came over and checked in the grass. It was a shalibram.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's pretty good.
In the same way, one becomes a great devotee of the Lord. In the Nisshringa Purana, it is said that in his previous birth, Prahlad Maharaj had an argument with a prostitute on the holy day of Nisshringa Chaturdasi. Arguing with her all day and night, he neither ate nor slept. And because in this way he fasted and kept an all-night vigil on that holy day, he became a great devotee of the Lord.
So it's powerful.
This works, right? The other stuff doesn't. That devotional service brings one to the Lord's transcendental abode is again explained in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.9.15. Namani Yesu Vigame Vivasa Grinanti. Let me take shelter of the lotus feet of him whose incarnations, qualities, and activities are mysterious imitations of world affairs. One who invokes his transcendental names even unconsciously or unwillingly, at the time he quits his life, is certainly washed immediately of the sins of many, many births and attains him without fail. In this verse, the word asu vigame means even though at the time of death one may not be able to speak the Lord's holy name very clearly, even unclear chanting will liberate him, or distinctly, or purely. Note the acharya here puts on. Now this is Jiva Goswami. He didn't make a mistake. He wasn't being sentimental. Jiva Goswami says that he means it. You know, because we'll sometimes say, oh yes, one holy name, if it's pure.
Yeah.
You know, we'll always put that caveat. No. The point is it's the name. We're talking about just going to Vaikuntha. You know, getting liberated, going to Vaikuntha. So then what's the problem? Like that. The point is if it's Krishna's name, it works. Because the whole cosmos is about Krishna. It's not about anything else. And the word vivasa means even without desiring it. Yeah. Just by habit, say it. You know? In this way, impelled by some other cause, by some cause other than one's own desire, one chants the Lord's holy name. The word vi means without, like ajamil. Like he's just chanting because it's his son's name. And the word vasa means desire. The Amar Kosh dictionary explains the word vasa here means desire. Whatever the reason, even without desire, if he chants, fruits will come. Right? So he's exacting this point because otherwise we will say this, no, but if it's, we always bring out these extreme,
yes.
you know,
yes.
try to make it impossible and no one can get and like that. You know, we're not as liberal as the Lord. Like that. Except in political correctness.
Stuff. Yes.
We get good points for that one.
Mark?
Yes.
Those attempts seem like they're bringing the power to within the living entity. It's up to me. Right?
Yes, it's up to me. Yes, that's what those attempts are. While in reality, it's the name itself is independent. So if you have touch with it, then the result is awarded by him. We don't define that. You know? We don't deal with that. So that's the whole difficult.
Alright.
Yeah.
So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur says merely mouthing the external syllables of the holy name does not mean that one is actually chanting the holy name.
Yes.
That's another side of it?
Means it depends upon your context. Here he's looking at, now if you're interested in pure devotional service, then you should be doing more than just saying the syllables. There should be the content of the heart. But what the acharya is saying here is that even if there is no content, that's what you've said, you're going to get liberated. You know, so this whole thing of removing all the sins of the universe or more sins than anyone can commit and all that, that's nothing. You're removing a dream. Is that like a big deal? You know? Because we think the dream is has substance. Therefore, we say, how is that possible? That was Chapala. What was his name?
Gopal
Chapala's point. How is that possible? So that's the whole thing. We have to be. The name is independent. Bhakti is independent. So it's not dependent on us. So then we'll say, oh, then I can do what I like. And it again comes back to, it's about me and my control. No, it's just you follow the recommendation of the acharyas, and just following that, you will benefit.
The bhakti in those contexts is harinamajan tamani shudanam.
Yes, but that's when you're dealing with that aspect. But other than that, then he also makes the point is, even people get, when he's, I think in the first verse where he's dealing with Nama Bash, that just that Nama Bash, let's say you're going down the street and on the other side of the street is some punks, right? I mean by the social niche, I mean by the character, right? Here. Because I don't want to offend him. No. You know, in the case of anybody before they joined had, you know, purple spiked hair and, you know, green also. And so then
so they chant derisively.
They chant derisively, yeah, Krishna, I like this, like that. They get liberated.
A lot of devotees came like that.
Yeah.
They beat up devotees, and then later on they become Magrari, poster Magrari people.
Yeah. No, that's the whole point. That's the power of the name. So it's not in our control. What we're having to be conscious of is the concept of chanting purely. Yeah. That we try to please Krishna, because that's our natural position. Doesn't mean that we won't get there, just as you mentioned here.
Now we have control of our mood,
yes,
attitude.
Our attitude, because technically that's all we have control of. You know, but we want to control everything else, but you know, that's all we have. So here, even the dim reflection of devotional service. So here's reflection is not in Nama Bas, right? So dim reflection, so even just, it's hardly anything, destroys all sins, and doesn't say some, all, and then brings one to the abode of the Lord Vishnu. Right? Now, Vaikuntha, you just go straight to Vaikuntha. But if you're going to Goloka, then you go first to Gokul. Right? So you'll get to Gokul.
That's the roadshow?
Yeah. You'll get to Gokul. But then in Gokul, now you have to, whatever is your level of advancement, you have to start from there and get to the platform of Prema. But, you know, you're in a pure environment, you're purified of all material contamination, there's good association, so it will happen. You know, it's designed that way. So that's the whole point. So that's what the Prabhupada makes. If someone remembers Krishna, here, in this verse, even though at the time of death one may not be able to speak the Lord's holy name very clearly, even unclear chanting will liberate him, or distinctly or purely. Right, he gets the benefit. So that's the whole point. If at the time that you remember Krishna, you go back to Godhead. Right? And then from that point, you'll develop from there to Prema. Right? And then you go to Goloka. Yes?
When one goes to Gokul, what is the process? Is one automatically on Bhav, or is where one was at already?
It means you're on Bhav because it's a neutral state. Because for us here, Bob's way up there, but Bob's just the neutral state. That's the point we fell from. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the Tathasta position, it's Bob. It's just neutral. So then, but because we're making that effort towards Krishna, then in the platform of Bob we'll continue until we get to Prema. Then it's dynamic. But Bob is the natural position. But we'll be at very beginning stages, because how much do we remember? Not much, so therefore we'll be on the whatever's the first level of, you know, I mean, it's just a matter of trying to develop the mood of the Brajvasis. That's the first thing. Then having developed that mood, then adjusting with this the particular form we have, you know, and getting to that, then you have to, then the aspect of how much you're remembering the Lord. So I think the first stage just means occasionally you remember. Then the second stage is more regularly. You know, so it goes up until it gets to samadhi. But that means then one will be busy in the household affairs and doing this and that, and one will occasionally remember Krishna. But the point is since Braj is about Krishna, then you know, you're going to be regularly hearing and this and that. So that's just a matter of time. Because you're on the neutral platform, you advance, just like the Kumaras. They're in the neutral platform. But then smelling the tulsi at the Lord's feet, then they move forward. So it's dynamic, you know, and it's scientific, you know. And that's the thing, is it includes all the things that required for sentiment, it requires all the things for as science. You know, it has all the intellectual aspects and it has all the dynamic aspects. You know, so therefore, this is the universal, like that. Everything else doesn't contain all that.
Can an impersonalist be on the level of Baba?
Can the impersonalist be on the level of Baba? They can be on that neutral position, but not, that means the ecstasy that they will be, then that's got a different name. There's Nama Bas and there's the, what's the other one? You remember?
Pratibimba.
Yeah, Pratibimba. Mm. I think Pratibimba means reflection. I think here it says dim reflection. Reflection means that. So Pratibimba means it's reflected. Means they're seeing the ecstasy of others and just they get into that mood because of their piety, and then, you know, the devotees are dancing, they're dancing. But if the devotees weren't there, they wouldn't be dancing. So they're only reflecting that happiness that they have. While Namabas, I think, means if the example is given like the morning when the sun's rising, that little bit of light is there. It's not the sun, but it's some light from that. So either way, whether it's a, you know, just that dim semblance of the, or the dim reflection, it's the name. And so it has effect. This is far out, right? That the drunkards with their stick tied to a rag.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. And proud as cuckoos. Just nice. In the next four verses, 16 through 19, Brahma praises the Lord as the universal form, the controller of time, and the highest object of worship with a form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Right, so we're seeing, you know, the all the stages of the Lord, all the features of the Lord. Your Lordship is the prime root of the three planetary systems. This tree has grown by first penetrating the material nature in three trunks, as me, Shiva, and you. The Almighty, for creation, maintenance, and dissolution. And we three have grown with many branches. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto you, the tree of the cosmic manifestation, because actually the potency of Brahma and Shiva is coming from Krishna. Right? People in general all engage in foolish acts, not in the real beneficial activities enunciated directly by you for their guidance. As long as their tendency for foolish work remains powerful, all their plans and the struggle for existence will be cut to pieces. I therefore offer my obeisances unto him who acts as eternal time. Your Lordship, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you who are indefatigable time and the enjoyer of all sacrifices. Although I am situated in an abode which will continue to exist for a time duration of two parardhas, although I am the leader of all the other planets in this universe, like two parardhas means two halves, so for him, 50 of his years. Right. Everybody, I mean, is supposed to live two parardhas, right? Whether they do or not is another thing. Although I am the leader of all other planets in the universe, and although I have undergone many, many years of penance for self-realization, still I offer my respects to you. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Brahma says, quote unquote, continues the next page.
Yes.
No?
No, okay. No. That was what he said.
Yeah, no. Okay, so it appears that's not what he said. Okay. He said this. Time affects those other than the devotees. Time quickly kills the aspirations for life of non-devotees. What to speak of their desires for enjoyment? Right? So here's the rub. Right? It's the time factor. I, Brahma, though situated on Brahma Loka, lasting for my 100 years, have fear of time, and to control time I perform austerities equivalent to many sacrifices. In spite of that, I still fear time. What was your contemplation in performing these sacrifices to control time? End quote. I was thinking that I could bring time under control by sacrifice to you, who are the controller of all sacrifices. But I am controlled by time, and even now I fear time. Without pure bhakti, time cannot be conquered. This is what I have understood today. Therefore, I should perform only pure bhakti. Thus, I offer my respects to the Lord of Sacrifices, the Supreme Lord with pure bhakti. Yeah, because as we get into it, we'll see here is that the Lord is time, because the modes of nature are functioning. But they're functioning because of time. Otherwise, passion means you're worried about the future, what you're going to get. What's the meaning of the mode of passion, unless there's future? Ignorance is lamenting about the past, how it should have been, how it could have been. But how do you lament, and how does that have effect unless there's past? Right? And how can you affect something now and get results and get enlightenment unless there's the present? So it's actually the time factor that runs everything. So what you see is time. Right? Now the building is here. That's because of time that it's in the present. It's maintaining. But it's not as good as it was before. Therefore, the past is present. You know what I'm saying? So what you see is time, and time's Krishna. So that's the whole point, is he's what makes it work, because material nature is dead matter. So it's functioning, it's alive because there's time. So that's the feature that comes in originally when the Lord glances, right? There's the false ego, there's time, right? And there's the Jesus. Right? Does that make sense? So that time, when then it comes into the material world, was in this chapter he was always talking about Kala?
Next.
That's the next chapter. Okay, because Kala is Kali. So you have that aspect of Kali is time, but on the material time. So that's just making everything work. But her potency is coming from eternal time, which is the Lord. Like that. So he's the one that's making it function. So, yes.
So time is connected with activity.
Yes, all activity is there. Yes, so anything that goes on is because there's time. That's why, you see, the scientists, time is one of the biggest bewilderments. Time and space, they can't, because these are coming from the eternal platform. Like, material world is fitting into as already existing space. It's not that matter is produced space. No, matter is situated in space. Right? That's the whole thing. It's already situated in space, and there's movement because there's already time. So time and space are the two things they cannot define. Right? What's within, then they observe and give ideas. But time and space, they can't deal with it. They know it's there, but they don't address it.
I have also difficulty.
Yes, because it's beyond. It's unlimited. It's the Lord, so that's the thing. So it's his potencies, time and space. You know, so these are ones that are there. These are existence, so they come in the existence platform. Right? So because that exists, there must be space to exist in. There must be time for there to be, to actually be able to appreciate existence. How do I know something exists? Because it's there. How is it there? Because of time. You know. So these are fundamental principles that are working. So they're working on that. So their transformation here then takes the, you know, Shiva and his wife. Right? But they're beyond the material manifestation. Right? There's Pradhan, but Shiva and Parvati are beyond that. So from that platform is where the effect on Pradhan is happening. So when the Lord glances with all that, that's already coming from him. That's then glanced upon Pradhan. Then Pradhan becomes Mahatattva. So there's already something going on before. There's that personal, all these potencies are there. But that's where the transformation comes in. Because in the spiritual world, then time and space are accommodating the Lord's pastimes or his desire. But here, time and space is then accommodating the desire of the living entity, but they're not in control. The Lord's Ichashakti controls in the spiritual world, but here our Ichashakti doesn't control. You know? Like that. So that's the thing. Because, and that's the fun part, because we have Icha, we have desire, that's why we are controlled. As soon as we give up desire, we're not controlled anymore. But factually, we can only give up desire to control when we accept the Lord's desire. So desire will be there, it just has to be the Lord's. When we connect to the Lord's, then we're free. But if we do separately, then we're controlled. So this is all functioning on that. So time is Brahman. Right? Because all the qualities are there. So the application of those qualities, that's time. So, you know, it's dealing with a very... That's the problem, is the other ones are more easy to understand. So Kriya and Icha are easier to understand because activities, I have a desire, I have a goal, I do an activity. Of course, there's an identity. But we don't get much into that because the identity is false. But that's the platform of eternity. That's where the Brahman platform is, time, existence, space, all these different things. So those are something that's beyond. Right? Because that's Vasudeva. So that's why getting to that platform, the process for the devotees and for the impersonalists is the same. But once you get to Vasudeva, they want to remain there. But we're then going on because there's Kriya and Icha. Right, so we're involved in the Lord's pastimes. While the impersonalists stop at the position of Vasudeva Sakya. Like that. So they never actually... And they don't get the full benefit, even the Vasudeva platform. Because part of the Vasudeva platform is appreciating the arrangement, the situation, which they don't. So they're only appreciating Brahman. And so they don't even know the fullness of Brahman, its potencies, its everything, because time is a factor of Brahman. So they can't see all these differences. So they're really not that clued in. You know, compared to an ordinary person, they're very, very well developed, but in comparison to devotees, they're very, very basic. Bottom of 72. Oh my Lord, by your own will, you appear in various species of living entities, among animals lower than human beings, as well as among the demigods, to perform your transcendental pastimes. You are not affected by material contamination. You just come to fulfill the obligations of your own principles of religion. And therefore, O Supreme Personality, I offer my obeisances unto you for manifesting such different forms. So, here's the Lord is coming in all these, species of life, not because he's controlled by the modes of nature. It's not because of karma. He comes just for his pastimes. That's the difference between him and us. Right? So, this is where the internal potency comes in. So, through his internal potency, he comes and does these pastimes. Well, for us, we're forced by the external potency to be involved in this past. Does that make sense? Verses 20 to 26. Brahma's request for empowerment to create. In verses 20 to 26, Brahma describes the Lord's mystical sleep. He prays that now that his sleep had ended, the Lord should be merciful to him, a surrendered devotee. Brahma then expresses his desire to create the material world. In that work of creation, he wishes to be unaffected by material association, right? Because the Lord is unaffected. So that's the point. He's pointing out that the Lord's not affected. He wishes that he will be unaffected like that also. Brahma requests the Lord's direction and then falls silent. Brahma said, "My Lord, you accept the pleasure of sleeping in the water of devastation, where there are violent waves, and you enjoy pleasure on the bed of snakes, showing the happiness of your sleep to intelligent persons." Right. So, for us, then, these waves of devastation are very long.
This is just too strong.
Most of them can just keep it on the side.
It's too strong. So I thought, okay, I'll chew it up and it gets stronger.
All the plans of mice and men. Okay. So the waves of devastation, and as we'll see later, is that this is one of the places where Lord Shiva can reside, or, you know, being the personification of anger. So anger, one of the places it can reside is in water. So we see in the ocean that when there's these huge waves, these devastating waves, that's a symptom of anger. Like that. But the Lord is able to just sleep there very peacefully. You know? And for us, just seeing a snake is a problem. But he's just sleeping on a bed of snake. So that's his. So that's his independent position. 14. His Holiness Jayadwaita Swami commented in Bhagavatam class on this verse, stating, "The Supreme Lord already is the supreme, best enjoyer. The living entities imitate his sleeping by taking an air bed to the seaside and lolling around on it. Business people would copy the serpent bed design if they knew of the style used by the Supreme Lord."
Good chance, yeah. I was also thinking this is where the water bed comes from. Yeah, the water bed. Yeah, but you don't like if someone's jumping on the other side.
No.
Lord peacefully sleeps.
It's funny, business people would copy it. "At that time, all the universal planets are stationed within your abdomen. O object of my worship, I am born from the house of your lotus navel for the purpose of creating the universe by your mercy. All these planets of the universe were stationed within your transcendental abdomen while you were enjoying sleep. Now your sleep having ended, your eyes are open like blossoming lotuses in the morning." 20 to 21. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 21. "Brahma is teaching us the beginning of archana regulations from morning, 4 o'clock, to night, 10 o'clock. Early in the morning, the devotee has to rise from his bed and pray to the Lord. And there are other regulative principles for offering Mangal Artik early in the morning. Foolish non-devotees, not understanding the importance of Archana, criticize the regulative principles, but they have no eyes to see that the Lord also sleeps by his own will." Right? So we'll see as this gets brought up quite a bit, is this Archana process. So the Archana process is what regulates your life in connection with the Lord. Otherwise, what are you going to do? Because human life means you will regulate. Animals are regulated. You know, so it's just a natural thing. So any group of human beings that identify in one as one community will have regulations. But then the point is do those regulations bring you closer to the Lord, or do they have nothing to do with that? That's the point. So archana means it regulates your life in connection with the Lord only. So that's a kaya. So there's no use, what Prabhupada says here, what's the foolish non-devote. So the foolishness then will criticize this archana process. But it's a very valid process, how to regulate the life to bring yourself closer to the Lord. That's the whole purpose. Is this?
Yeah.
Like that. One can, oh, it means, of course, because it's a science, science means it's there, you discuss it and everything like that. But one never doubts the science. Right? I mean, science is there, you don't understand the point, but you don't think science is wrong. Right? So the same way as God consciousness, it's not wrong, or the archana vidhi, it's not wrong. It's just you don't may not understand it, how it functions. So then we try to understand that.
Yes.
The impersonal conception of the Supreme is so detrimental to the path of devotional service that it is very difficult to associate with the stubborn non-devotees who always think in terms of material conceptions. Impersonalists always think backwards. They think that because there is a form in matter, spirit should be formless. Because in matter there is sleep, in spirit there cannot be sleep. Because the sleeping of the deity is accepted in archana worship, the archana is maya. Right? So they're setting their own standards. So they're saying, no, no, but spirit is opposite. Yes, but you have to know how it's opposite. This is temporary, that's eternal. This is full of misery, that's full of happiness. Right? This is based on the external secondary points. There it's based on the primary internal points. So you have to know what is the standards, how to do it. So it's speculative how they define opposite.
Yes. So that they're reversing the details and not the principle?
Yes, because they think that they're dealing on the spiritual platform when they're still dealing on the material platform. They're only worried about the externals. Because it says here, form, sleep, right?
Yes.
So it's external. So they're not seeing the internal aspect because they don't understand the internal potency. That's the principle. Okay. All these thoughts are basically material. It means there's the concept of the soul of Brahman, but their concept is actually because the soul, technically, according to their philosophy, has come from matter. Mm-hmm. Right? And Brahman has no qualities. So even their thoughts on the spiritual platform are basically material.
Yes.
To think either positively or negatively is still thinking materially. Right? So you think positively means karma, negatively means jnana.
Yes.
Right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because the if you're positive, then I will do work, I'll be happy.
Yes.
Negative means I do the work, I'm still not happy. So therefore, let's get out of here. Right? You know. Knowledge accepted from the superior source of the Vedas is standard. Right? So that's standard, meaning this is what you base everything on.
Yes.
Like that. Then from there, then you get into detail, how to apply it. Here in these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that archana is recommended. Before Brahma took up the task of creation, he found the Lord sleeping on the serpent bed in the waves of the water of devastation. Therefore, sleeping exists in the internal potency of the Lord. And this is not denied by pure devotees of the Lord like Brahma and his disciplic succession. It is clearly said here that the Lord slept very happily within the violent waves of the water, manifesting thereby that he was able to do anything and everything by his transcendental will and not be hampered by any circumstances. So he could sleep even in this situation. The Mayavadi cannot think beyond this material experience, and thus he denies the Lord's ability to sleep within the water. Because he only knows material, so all of his thought patterns are also based on material. So there actually is no transcendental thinking by the impersonalist.
Yes.
Right? So,
are we here distinguishing between spiritual and transcendental? Or is it
Technically, they're not even spiritual.
No. Okay.
They're trying to be. So technically only your Brahmavadis then can get to that program. Because you see is that four Kumaras, they didn't have a problem going and visiting the form of the Lord that they know to be transcendental. They just think that there's nothing beyond the existence of transcendental. It's only when they smell the tulsi at the Lord's feet, then they understand that there's a whole nother world beyond just existing in transcendence.
Uh-huh.
Right? They understand that there's emotion and feelings and interaction. So that, and that's spiritual, because they themselves are spiritual, they're not material. Right? They're manifest within this realm, they're dealing with this realm, but actually they're from before. Because they're part of the spiritual creation, the primary creation, but they're also part of the secondary creation. Right? So the primary creation is Krishna's, the secondary creation is Brahma's, but the four Kumaras are part of both. Like that. Does that make sense? So, because they represent, that'll come up, they represent all these qualities of the Lord. You didn't already read that. You didn't already read that. Yeah?
Well, what sense they are part of both? They were created in the primary and they're still only functioning.
No, because they represent these. It means it's just like Sanat Kumar. Who is he? He's Cupid. Like that. So they actually represent all these qualities of the Lord.
Cupid from primary.
Yes, but then they're manifest in the secondary. So it's just like the primary, the primary demigods, you don't see them here. You see their expansions here, but it seems that they somehow know. There's some connection. It's just that Maitreya Muni mentions that they're both, how do you say? Yeah, I think it's Prakrita and Vikrita, is that it? There's some term that is the same word, but one has the beginning is different. One means Krishna's creation, one means Brahma's creation. Oh, it will come up. His mistake is that he compares the Lord to himself, and that comparison is also material thought, because he thinks, I do this, it's Maya, so the Lord does that, it's Maya. So that's the thing, it's still self-centered. It's not actually going beyond that. The whole philosophy of the Mayavad school, based on not this, not that, neti neti, is basically material. So all you're doing is removing the material.
Yes.
Their goal is spiritual, so that's the spiritual aspect, but they technically don't even really understand what is spiritual.
So it's just material in the negative.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Such thought cannot give one the chance to know the Supreme Personality of the Godhead as he is. It may get you out of the material world, but you won't know the Lord. Because you don't accept the Lord, really. Now, how can you know someone you don't accept? Someone comes before you and I say, you don't exist. You know? And, you know, how will I get to know that person? Right? Does that make sense? It's just like this, just at a practical point. The cheerleader group, do they actually know anybody in the high school?
Yeah.
No. Why? Because they don't exist. Only they exist. Right?
Yeah.
So they don't know anybody. So that's the mundane.
That's a Mayavadi.
Yes. Yeah. Having offered praise I wasn't sure, but having offered praise in verse 21, it says no, in 21 verses. 1 to 21. Brahma now makes his request in 4 verses, 22 to 25. Let the Supreme Lord be merciful towards me. He is the one friend and soul of all living entities in the world. He maintains all for their ultimate happiness by his 6 transcendental opulences. May he be merciful towards me so that I, as before, may be empowered with the introspection to create, for I am also one of the surrendered souls who are dear to the Lord. The Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, is always the benefactor of the surrendered souls. His activities are always enacted through his internal potency, Rama, or the Goddess of Fortune. I pray only to engage in his service in the creation of the material world. And I pray that I not be materially affected by my works, for thus I may be able to give up the false prestige of being the creator.
It seems kind of duplicitous.
Why?
Because, oh, you're so great, I pray to only be in your service, and then actually it's kind of his own desire that he's trying
to... it's like this. Within the material world, you're starting from the platform of gauging your desires on the Lord's service. So he wants, because he is in this position, he is the empowered incarnation, but he's only empowered, he's not the Lord himself. Right? And even if he's the Lord himself, still he still worships his origin.
Supreme Lord.
Right, yeah. So this is who he is and what he's supposed to be doing. But the point is even though this is what he is and it's what he's supposed to be doing, he still can only do it by the grace of the Lord. Right? How would this be applicable to us? Let us say we get some position. Right?
Yes.
So within the so we think that okay, because I have the position, that's my power to do things, that's my authority. No, it's that position carries the Lord's potency, so that I'm able to use that potency properly to serve the Lord and to not be affected by be affected by the influence of what I'm doing. Then that's valid for everybody.
So it's the proper balance between freedom and responsibility?
Yes, because you have the responsibility. So you have to do that, whether you want to do that or not. But that position, because that's his nature, he's not going to decide, sit down in meditation and decide he doesn't want to be Brahma. He'd rather go for a picnic. But how does he go for a picnic? There's nowhere to go.
So. Start somewhere. Maybe in another life he'll go for a picnic.
Well, that's, we all did that.
Yeah, don't do that.
The Lord's potencies are innumerable. As he lies down in the water of devastation, I am born as the total universal energy from that navel lake in which the lotus sprouts. Right? So it means from devastation will come creation. Then there'll be maintenance, and there'll be devastation. Then creation will come, like we said before. From Buddhism, then karma will come up.
Yes.
And from karma, then impersonalism will come up. From impersonalism will come up Buddhism.
Yes.
That's why reversing it is so easy to take Buddhism and move it back into impersonalism. Because one is just a transformation of the other.
Buddhism is within impersonalism, no? I mean, it's a form of impersonalism.
No, what we're saying is that Shankaracharya took Buddhism and just reversed it back into impersonalism.
Oh, like that.
Because it's the same thing. It's just whether you accept the authority of the Veda or not. Right? Because if you accept the authority, you see, karmakanda, you accept the authority of the Veda and you're going to get some material benefit from that. Then you understand there's no material benefit, so you give up the desire for that, though you accept the Veda. Then Buddhism means you give up the Veda.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So since that doesn't work, then you start at the beginning again. Hey, we could follow the Veda and get some, go to the heavenly planets. Yeah.
It's continuous mind. No end. No end.
It just keeps going. Yeah. That's the whole thing. It just keeps going.
You don't remember very well.
No. That's the problem. I am now engaged in manifesting his diverse energies in the form of the cosmic manifestation. I therefore pray that in the course of my material activities, I may not be deviated from the vibration of the Vedic hymns. 22-24. Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 24 explains. Every person engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord in this material world is prone to so many material activities. And if one is not strong enough to protect himself against the onslaught of material affection, he may be diverted from the spiritual energy. Right? So this is, his point is that Brahma is setting that example, but it applies to everybody. Right? Because one is dealing with so much material activity, that's why we're here in the first place. then if we're not strong enough, we may get distracted. So that's the whole point, is that one takes shelter of the Lord, as Brahma is doing, then one can be involved in these activities and not be distracted. Because what's the point is, whatever material benefits you get from the devotional activities, or from whatever one's endeavor one's making, it's going to be temporary anyway, because that's the nature of this world. So you don't want to be, at the end of the day, stuck with only that. Right? You want to keep remembering the Lord. So if facility's there, nice. But facility will go away. And having gone away, it will come back. That's just how it works. You know? So therefore you want to be, you know, it's just like you're Krishna conscious in the day, when night comes then you're not. Or you're Krishna at night and then the day or night. You just want to be Krishna conscious, whether it's day or night, it doesn't matter.
So Brahma basically is afraid of not being Krishna conscious.
Yes.
By this whole process of material creation.
Yes, because so much detail. He has to meditate on it and be so absorbed in this mechanically how it works, that he gets absorbed in the mechanics of the material world. He's worried that in that process he might forget the Lord. Because the Vedic hymns means, one, it's the instructions of the Lord, it's the name of the Lord, that's the processes, you know, the whole thing, so he might forget that and just get absorbed in the mechanics of things. So that's the difficult.
Operating principle.
Yes.
It is why only a qualified jiva can become Brahma.
Yes, that he has to be the most pious. But most pious up to a particular standard. It's not just, okay, everybody's rat bags, this guy's only half a rat bag, so he's Brahma. No, that's not like that. But then Krishna becomes Brahma. Yes. Like that. So it's like that. All the posts of all the demigods and everything in the universe is there open for jivas to take if they're pious enough. But if at any time they're not, then Krishna will take all those positions. Therefore, sometimes he comes as Indra. I think Yajna is an incarnation of the Lord who took the position of Indra because there was no Indra. Like that. So the same with Brahma. So it's whenever there's somebody qualified, then.
Otherwise, it is a mess.
Yes.
Consultants are
a mess. You know? Yeah. You say if the corporate businessman figured this one out, then he would be. It might be a bit of a. How you say the ultimate monopoly, right?
Yes.
Control everything. Yeah, but then after that, then what would you do?
Yeah.
You get bored.
Become a Buddhist.
Yeah, become a Buddhist, yeah. In the material creation, Brahma has to create all kinds of living entities with bodies suitable to their material conditions. Brahma wants to be protected by the Lord because he has to contact many, many vicious living entities. Because a lot of them aren't nice. Right? An ordinary Brahmana may fall from the Brahma Tejas, or the power of Brahminical excellence, due to his association with many fallen conditioned souls. Brahma, as the supermost Brahmana, is afraid of such a fall down. Right? Because how many people we associate with, and there's a problem. Right? Brahma is associated with every living entity in the universe and creating the bodies for everything. Right? So he's worried that it's a bit more, you know, delicate here.
Brahma creates only species, then Prajapatis, they do them.
Still.
It's
yes.
A lot.
It's a lot, but I'm just saying it's...
Like
but he still is the one that creates the potential that the Prajapatis can do that.
Mm.
It's not that the Prajapatis, they're just, you know, how you say, the... Just like he's representing the Lord, so they're the like surrogate parents for this particular species.
Yeah.
But the potency of that is still coming through Brahma from the Lord. You know, so he has to deal with it all.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when they come up and they have problems between them, he has to work it out. You know, so. No, you think you have trouble with a few kids. So imagine you have the whole universe as the kids. And
yes. Is it true that that it comes to the material world, it takes birth at Brahma, and then becomes like attracted to all the living, to all the species, and then goes further down.
No, it just means that the living entity comes in first as Brahma, because if you're coming from the spiritual world, then you have more piety than anybody here, so then you're qualified. But then the difficulty is being, here he's saying that he may not become deviated. So then if we're sitting here, it means we were deviated. Right? Like that. But you don't have to get into all the species of life, and you have to go, you don't have to get, that's overthinking. Right? It's just that he becomes distracted, because from there then they become Prajapatis, the great sages, and then it's downhill from there.
But why is it said that everyone who is when they die, when the Brahma dies, everyone from that planet goes back to
him? If he goes.
If he goes.
When he goes, they go. If he doesn't go, they don't go. Yeah, so in other words, you can scratch that one off your list of going to Brahma Loka and going back to Godhead from there. Yeah. Well, this one you don't have to worry, because this Brahma is a devotee. So that's right, if I'm saying. So how many are interested in going back to Godhead? So if you are supposed to go back to Godhead, then you'll be in a universe where the Brahma is going back to Godhead. So you don't have to worry that, you know, you want to go and no one else is going.
Come on.
But you only attain Vaikuntha. You know what I'm saying? The residents of Brahma Loka, they go. He's a devotee. No, but I'm saying he's a devotee. So if he's a devotee, then that's special. See, and a lot of the time, Rupa Goswami points out that it seems to be it's less often that there's a jiva in the position of Brahma. Most of the time it seems that it's Krishna takes that position. So then also you don't have to worry. Then everybody can go back to Godhead. Yeah, back to Godhead part. Going back to Godhead from Brahma Loka, that one I wouldn't meditate on too much.
Gives new meaning to going back to Godhead in one lifetime.
Yeah. Does that make sense? You know, because otherwise, if you're qualified, you go back by another method. But why would it be so? Means if Brahma is just a follower of the Vedic principles, then what's the association you're getting being on Brahma Loka?
Maybe the same.
Yeah, so now if Brahma is a devotee, what's the association you're getting? So naturally, if you spend 2 pararthas of Brahma hanging out on Brahma Loka, there's a good chance you'll pick up some devotional inclination. Right? So then you go, everybody goes back to Godhead. Now, if Brahma is just a materialist, then there's a good chance everybody there will be. If you're interested in devotional service, you don't have to worry. Narad Muni's there, Lord Shiva's there. You can get that association, but you're going not because Brahma's going and his associate, you're going because of the other devotional association. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is by association of devotees, that's how you go back to Godhead. So the principle doesn't change. Right? If Brahma's a devotee, then in his court, then with the personified Vedas, what is he going to discuss? He's going to discuss the Shastra according to devotional service. But if he's not, he's just pious, then what's he going to do? They're just going to discuss it according to karma or jnana. Is that what I said? This is a warning for one and all in the spiritual advancement of life. Unless one is sufficiently protected by the Lord, he may fall down from his spiritual position. Therefore, one has to pray constantly to the Lord for protection and the blessings to carry out one's duty. Lord Chaitanya also entrusted his missionary work to his devotees and assured them of his protection against the onslaught of material affection. The path of spiritual life is stated in the Vedas to be like the edge of a sharpened razor. A little inattentiveness may at once create havoc and bloodshed. But one who is a completely surrendered soul, always seeking protection from the Lord in the discharge of his entrusted duties, has no fear of falling into material contamination. And so if you don't follow it properly with the proper attitude, it can give problems. So if devotees have a perception that, you know, I did this and it didn't work out well, then that's because it wasn't done right. But the difficulty is because we're always perfect in the center of the universe, therefore it can't be our fault, it has to be someone else's fault. And so therefore we come up with the idea there must be some problem in devotional service. But it can't be because it's coming from the Shastra. It's given to us by the Acharyas, so there must, it must be perfect. So if something's going wrong, it means we're not applying it properly. Therefore we're not getting a proper result. Is that what
How about everybody else is not applying it properly?
That could work. But then how do you apply that everybody else is not applying? That's their problem. So then why is that a problem for you?
Because I want everybody to be liberated in pure devotional service and these guys are messing it up.
And why do you want that?
Because I'm a pure devotee, so I need to preach.
Okay, and what's the significance of being a pure devotee?
Pleasing Prabhupada and Krishna.
You just throw that at the end just for fun? Or you were backed into a corner and you just the other way out.
That was it.
Okay. Yeah, so the whole thing is, as we see, the beginning of the conversation is just about yourself. Because the point is, if you want to be the greatest, then, okay, you know, boxers get old and, you know, things like that. So then, you know, you take up some other things. So you take up the philanthropic, that has weaknesses, so you take up the devotional, you know, then it looks good on the resume, right? Yeah. But then at some point, then you kind of have to, well, it's, you know. Yeah. So as long as you keep thinking, go all the way back, then it will correct itself.
Interesting.
But if you don't, then... But... There is one point of thing here that is inspiring, is that here. Two intoxicated drunkards, proud as peacocks. Even they went back to Godhead, so there's still hope.
Yes. This attitude of Brahma shows the importance to plan. To plan things. This means Brahma was trying to understand how to become fully protected by the Lord before doing.
Yes, you could say the plan. I would take it a step further, is that it's knowledge. Because then you make a plan based on knowledge.
Yes.
So because he had the knowledge that the material energy is very bewildering. In other words, he is one living entity. Mm-hmm. But and he may be in charge of the mode of passion, but the material nature is in charge of the whole thing.
Yes.
You know, and only Krishna is in charge of her.
Yes.
So unless he has his blessing, he may easily be overwhelmed by the material energy. So because of that, then he's off. So here, I wouldn't say as much as that. It would indicate the idea of planning, but I wouldn't say it's planning would be the reason he's offering prayers. I would say that's more thoughtfulness.
Yes.
And then from that, then you have to act.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, so it would be the seed of that, but I wouldn't say that this is necessarily an example of that. Does that make sense? Because it's a matter of the thoughtfulness, contemplation, proper knowledge, of seeing how that has to apply in your life. So that would be more in contemplation. When you see all that, then you make a plan. So when the sambandha is correct, you contemplate who I am, you know, what's to be done, what can be done, what are results that can be done, how that can be done, all these things. Then you can put together, okay, now I'll make a plan.
Yes.
Like that. So this would be preliminary to the plan.
Yes. Yes. So, it's a complete introspection.
Yes, complete introspection. That's the whole thing. Because if you're introspective like that, then you have to come to the Lord. Just like we went to, you know, the preacher's lamentation here, right? And so as we go back and as you get more, contemplate deeper and deeper, at one point you have to come to the Lord.
Yes.
Otherwise, then you're going to have to say, it's me! All right, you know, so since you want to avoid that one, at least in the society of devotees, you know, it might work nice with non-devotees,
yes.
But you know, but the society of devotees are kind of, okay, I'm going to have to... You know, so you always have to get to the Lord because He is the cause of all causes. He is the ultimate goal of everything. Right? There's so many goals, but He's the ultimate goal. So that's something. Therefore, according to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Brahma fervently prays to the Lord as follows. The extent that I can enter into the ocean of your qualities is because of the mercy arising from studying the Veda. O Lord, the Vedas are your eyes. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:24. Now, however, because of lack of concentration due to creating the universe, I may forget the Vedas. May that not happen. Right, so he's able to appreciate the Lord because of his studying the Vedas, right?
Yes.
And he's received the Veda from where? From the bona fide guru, right? So you don't get any more bona fide than that, right? So that principle, but in applying, then he may get distracted. That's the meaning of distraction, concentration is lost. Because you're doing the activity, but then there's results of these activities. That then the distraction is I could enjoy that. Or that gives me a particular position because I've obtained that. Does that make sense? You're functioning in the mode of goodness, but you may get distracted by passion, means the results that are coming. Or ignorance, means, you know, who I am. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In this way, Brahma prays, I, the Vijnanamaya Purusha, Vijnana Shakti, arose from the lake in the navel of the Lord who lay in the water. Because Brahma is the form of the aggregate of jivas, or the presiding deity of Bodhitattva, he is called Vijnana Shakti. Right? Because it means you're dealing with jivas themselves. So the platform of the jiva, that's Vijnanamaya.
Yes.
Right? Because below that, then you're talking about the conditioning.
Yes.
But when you're just talking about the jiva themselves, that's Vijnanamoy. Mm-hmm. Anandamoy is the jiva related to the Lord, yes.
This is Brahman realization.
Yes, that's where... Though technically, Anandamoy, the lower aspects of it, if you're actually situated in Brahman realization, you will be in Anandamoy.
Hmm.
But it's not the Anandamoy, it's not personal Anandamoy. It's interesting. So it's temporary. So that's why, for us, we don't really count it as Anandamoy. But technically, you can say they're there. But they're, you know, it's like they're there, and you look away, and you look back, they're gone. So, you know, you don't really count that, you know, that's really there.
But isn't it that the others will naturally go to Anandamoy? So it's temporary either way?
The others means?
I mean, you say that if you're impersonalist, then you're on Vijnanamoy, that's temporary, and we don't count it.
Mm-hmm.
So someone who's not, who's actually knows the proper position, would naturally move towards Anandamaya and realize Krishna. So that's also temporary.
Oh, you mean you're saying all the
you're either
the four
devotee
levels.
And you move towards Anandamaya.
Because
well,
the devotee is that's their goal is Anandamaya. So that's the basic position. Though they may be functioning from these other positions. right? Mm-hmm. But if you're functioning anandamayi, that's what's recommended. That's pure devotion service. Because otherwise mixed means it's mixed with one of these other four platforms.
So anandamayi is the only eternal.
That's platform. The only eternal. The other ones will be manifest and unmanifest. Because they're dealing with conditioning. Because even here, the vijnanamayi, you're dealing with the conditioned jiva. Yes. So he's on the platform of Vasudeva Sattva, but he's not a devotee, or hasn't taken that up very seriously. Yes. Does that make sense? So there's still too much identity with the material nature. Yes. Does that make sense? Yeah. May my manifestation of the words of the Vedas coming from my limbs not be lost as I create the universe, a form of the Supreme Lord. May I not forget because of Maya. So he's empowered by the Lord. What he's creating is the Lord. Right? How he's creating it is defined by the Lord. But he wants to make sure that he doesn't forget this because of Maya. Because Maya, that's what she does, is she makes one forget. First she covers, then throws. Because if she throws you when you're not covered, you go, what is this?
What?
You know? Yeah. You know. But if you're covered, then it's great.
Yeah. 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 A bag over your head and throw you into a van.
Yeah, yeah.
Something's going on.
Yeah, yeah. You don't really know what. Yeah. Okay. Brahma... okay. Brahma continues, the Lord who is supreme and is the oldest of all is unlimitedly merciful. I wish that he may smilingly bestow his benediction upon me by opening his lotus eyes. He can uplift the entire cosmic creation and remove our dejection by kindly speaking his directions. Footnote 25. This verse spoken by Brahma is used to wake up the Lord in our archana process. So sav abharad adabra karuna bhagavan vivridha prema smitena nayana buruham vijribhan utaya vishva vijayaya chano vishadam madhya Girapan Naya Tat Purusha Purana. Purana. Yeah, that's all. Okay, so then we'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainatai Gaurav.
It's an interesting thing with this false ego, how it's so easy to think that you're a better devotee than the others.
Yeah, that's it. It's a natural... It'll happen at any stage, but it's most one has to be careful at the neophyte platform, because there one judges betterness based on one's abilities, one's material conditioned abilities. If one, by one's definition, considers one's abilities better than someone else, then that you're more devotionally advanced. Like, so it's a manager. I'm a better manager, so I'm more advanced. And since I'm a manager and others are not, I'm more advanced than everybody else. But then of other managers, I'm that. But this manager is better than someone, he's more advanced than me. But it'll be based on that. Or someone, let's say, is a singer, so because he does the best kirtan, therefore he's more advanced than anybody. Or if someone's a cook, they're more advanced because they can cook better. Or, you know, whatever it is, you define your advancement based on your capability of the condition.
So it's basically still materialistic.
It's just
ideas.
That's why the neophyte also that the term can be used properly, because he identifies with the material energy and sees it according to that.
And it seems it comes down to training and study rather than just reading or practice. Is that Because it seems like you experience someone who's been in the movement for a long time, but, you know, not actually received any training or studying under anyone. And it's still there's this inability to distinguish between the activity and the purpose of the activity.
The point is it's at least as if when they do things connected to Krishna, it doesn't matter. It will naturally come, because it points out Krishna will reveal it in the heart. But the acharyas have recommended that you do the studying process, you know, like that, because that's the whole point. Is Krishna puts you in contact with the devotees, so that it works.
But the inability to appreciate the devotees.
That's a problem. If you can't appreciate the devotees, now that's a problem. If you can't appreciate technical philosophy, that's not technically a problem, as long as you're engaged. Mm. If because of that you can't engage in devotional service, that will get in the way. But if you can engage, then don't worry about it. Mm. Just because someone isn't interested in technical things, it doesn't really matter.
No.
Like that. Point is to be engaged. So if someone has that ability, they should use it. Just like if you can manage, you should manage. If you can do kirtan, you should do that. So if you can study, you should do that.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, because we are an educational movement. So then the more you understand, the more you have to work with to explain. It's just all you need is one point to understand fully, and you're God conscious. So we have more points. There's more of a chance that one of them we may understand.
Flick back and forth.
Yeah. By hearing all these, eventually we may go, hey, there's a theme here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.